Hello, my name is Tawana Hodge. I'm a second year PhD student in the College of Information Studies at University of Maryland, College Park. And I am here with other classmates to talk about assigned text for this week, Edward Glisson's Poetics of Relation, as well as Antonio Meneses-Rijo, The Repeating Island. The introduction is what we have been assigned to read, and I will let my wonderful classmates introduce themselves before we dive in, and I will let Charlie go first.
Hey everybody, my name's Charlie. I'm an English MA student here at the University of Maryland, and I think that's all we need by way of introduction, unless you want more at all.
No, that is good. Abby, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi everyone, I'm Abby. This is my first Critical Caribbean class, and I'm happy to be here with Tawana and Charlie. And I'm a communication student at University of Maryland.
Thank you so much for you all introducing yourselves. And so the first question is, what do you feel about the text that were signed? I know for me, it was challenging, I think, to wrap my head around some of the really important and key concepts and terms that were introduced in both texts. But it was a really great way for me to further understand about how people perceive the Caribbean. And I've outside of this class, I probably would have never have read these texts. And really thinking about the notions of like chaos and fry zone, and creolization, plantation, archipelago and repetition, some of the key things that, these two texts touch on. And it's definitely something where I find myself really thinking that I need to go back and thoroughly read some of the passages, particularly in the Poetics of Relation, and thinking about like what does it mean to have a Caribbean identity, and looking at Caribbeanness from a more asset-based or strength-based perspective. And in class, we had a very riveting conversation, which we will kind of touch on throughout this episode. But that was kind of my feelings about the text. And so I will let Abby go next.
Thank you for sharing that, Tawana. And I also had similar experience as I went through both of those readings, the Poetics of Relation and Introduction, The Repeating Island. I found it interesting that kind of what you said, that there are these various perspectives on what it means to be Caribbean and how the Caribbean is defined. But there are some similarities and overlaps in concepts such as the rhizome in Poetics of Relation and Benita's talking about roots and how that's a central concept in the Caribbean, as he mentions that people in the Caribbean were uprooted, and particularly we talked about the uprootedness for from Africa and African traditions. So I also agree that I need to, these are texts that I think every time you go back, there's something new and another revelation that I find as it relates to this concept. But I appreciate that both texts really spend a lot of time thinking about identity and thinking about the complex nature of the Caribbean in terms of coloniality and how it's an archipelago that is not easily defined. And I'll pass it on to Charlie.
Thanks to you both for getting us started. I shared a lot of your experiences. The Glisson in particular is the thinking is overwhelmingly powerful. And I think that's really evident, or that's really part of the experience of reading it, is you feel that there's so much complex thinking available here. But the first pass it feels like you're only getting on the surface, but there are small, I felt small kind of glimpses of insight or understanding maybe around what I think he was getting at. And I think some of the more like aphoristic section where he either summarizes or does these shorter and like single line lines about what relation is, like it was starting to click, but it is really hard to see. But that really also relates to what you all are talking about with regard to Caribbeanness in a kind of something that is so dynamic and multivaried and difficult to pin down while also being really, it reminds me of some of the vitality that Benitez Rojo also describes, the kind of certain way, like maybe each of these texts have a sort of certain way about them, and that was kind of evident in the experience of reading them. And there was a feeling of optimism that I think gets through both of them, which I think each of you referred to, or what Juana at least was talking about, an asset-based or a strength-based way of thinking about Caribbeanness that felt present in each. I don't know if you want to expand on that in particular, Tawana, to keep us going, but that would be my suggestion.
Yeah, sure, totally. Thank you, Charlie and Abby. For me, I was born and raised in the Virgin Islands, and so, and my family have connections to like Dominica and Guela, and so like I consider myself to be Afro-Caribbean or Black Caribbean. And you know, like I even have like a US Virgin Islands flag in my car. And because for me my Caribbean identity is very important. And you know, in Gleason's work is thinking about, you know, culture, identity, ethnicity, and thinking about, you know, for the Caribbean, the history is one that is connected to the transatlantic slave trade. And so you have mainly the erasure of the indigenous populations in most of the Caribbean islands. They do exist, but not many of them do. And so when you have the transatlantic slave trade that brought enslaved Africans to the Caribbean, you had this different way of existing that were born. And Fernand's kind of look at, you know, from my interpretation as well as the conversation we had in class, that, you know, because of colonization and imperialism and enslavement, that, you know, Creole is not seen as a positive. There was a different way that it was kind of framed, but like that's kind of what's coming to mind. Like there weren't any positives because like colonialism is a total enclosed system and there's nothing positive from it. And so, you know, Creole, Patois, you know, these were things that came out of colonialism. And because it did, it is something that is seen as like kind of bastardized or like deficient in some ways. But in Gleason's work, he kind of like, you know, countered that and says that, no, what has been created is something that is rooted in strength. And so think about like that rootedness too, and that, you know, yes, they might have been cut off from like the singular root, you know, being from the African continent, but like in the Caribbean, the kind of that rhizome of many roots, you know. And so there's many different ways and many different Creoles that came about, and in particular he focuses on French Creole in Gleason's book, but for me, it gives a more sense of optimism and positivity about, you know, the strengths of what was created, you know, and what was created is something to take pride in. And so that's where, for me, like that asset-based and strength-based perspective came from, and which I'm very appreciative of the fact that Glissant goes into great detail, you know, talking about this and talking about the importance of language, and sometimes that we don't need to all have access to it. So that's and it's so interesting for me. And then thinking about like, what does it mean to be in relation? Like, we talk about the big R relation and like relationality as well. And so with that, I'm curious about kind of like, are there any passages or sequence of ideas that struck you and why? And there's one that's like, relation is movement. And Tuesday, I went to this talk by Dr. Tonya Sutherland, who talked about her book, Resurrecting the Black Body. And she talked about, I think it's Catherine Dunham, who went to the Caribbean, I think in the pre-1960s, I can confidently say that. And she was able to go to different Caribbean islands and record, audiovisually record like sacred and traditional dances. And just even seeing, and like, there's something that is called, well, I'm getting my head of myself a little bit, but, you know, seeing this kind of work that is done, seeing the videos that were shared, and just thinking about, you know, movement of the bodies, thinking about like, you know, carnival and festival, you know, seasons and the parade and the drummers and like these different movements that are connected to our ancestors, to Africa, but not necessarily, but it's been transformed, you know, so much. And so for me, when I think about like relation is movement, it's like movement of the body, but also thinking about migration. So for you all, anything that stuck with you and why? And I'll let Charlie go first.
I think, thanks for bringing up Catherine Dunham. I was just hearing about her work through my partner recently. And I think that's such a, the way that movement and dance in particular, when you mentioned about carnival, runs through both of these texts. And I think runs back through the surrealists too, though in a different way. But I think the like that sense of movement and the idea of relation as movement and how that relates to chaos. And chaos just meaning in more in the sense of like, not in a more colloquial sense, but in the sense of we don't, of something that's dynamic and not systematically something you can pin down. Those themes, I think, run straight through all of this. And the passage that I think really helps me think about capital R relation is from page 171, which reads, "The difference between relation and totality lies in the fact that relation is active within itself, whereas totality already in its very concept is in danger of immobility, and relation is moving." So everything about what we're thinking of as relation is defined in opposition to totality, understand relation approaches totality without reaching it, because for it to reach totality would mean that it would stop, it would be in danger of immobility. And I think we have to think about, when we're thinking about culture and language, and the rhizome, we have to think about mobility, and that passage helps us really hold on to that. And I would also relate that to Benitez Rojo's section on polyrhythms, where he connects a body, watching a body's movement kind of become more than what it was, watching like footsteps adopt the rhythm, and how that the Caribbean rhythm becomes a meta rhythm that can be arrived at through a system of signs, which he's saying near the bottom of page 18. So this meta rhythm runs through dance, music, language, text, body language. But I think to put that in conversation with Glisson would be to say we can only define, and what I think Catherine Dunham would also say, is you can kind of like, how do we sort of work to observe and sort of feel and notice and be with it and encounter and like be a part of this relation together, and like these movements and these rhythms, and think about them while knowing that like to try to grasp them or define them or see them in their totality is to kind of like render them something different than what they are. You can tell me if that doesn't really make sense, or what you think about that, Abby. I'd love to hear from you.
Thank you so much, Charlie and Tawana. I'm really happy, Tawana, that you brought up movement, and particularly with carnivals and festivals, because something that stood out to me from this reading, in terms of movement, I really thought about bomba in Puerto Rico, which is in African tradition. It's a music and resistance, form of resistance that was born on the plantation. And a lot of times people forget that Puerto Rico was part of the Atlantic slave trade, or that this music and dance comes from such a place of pain and violence. And Charlie, what you brought up with the relation to dance, the movement, and chaos made me think of the relation with this in Bomba. And one passage that stood out to me specifically was on page 3 in Benitez Rojo's work, where it says, chaos looks toward everything that repeats, reproduces, grows, decays, unfolds, flows, spins, vibrates, and seeds. And I think something really interesting that you both brought up, and going back to something Tawana said, is that Glisson, he also talks about all of this beautiful culture and production of knowledge that is created in the Caribbean, and so I think that it's really interesting that this ties into the concept of chaos, where it is very complicated. There, of course, is a lot of pain and trauma from the plantation, from the Atlantic slave trade, but the people who were colonized, in this case, enslaved Africans, then do show this form of Black joy through music, through dance. And we see that even now, these African oral traditions and traditions are still occurring through the forms of festivals and carnivals.
Thank you for that. I was like taking notes as you all were sharing, because I just love all of the connections that you all have made, and you know, making me think through some of the things that I myself got from these readings. The next question is, what were some key ideas in the readings, and how do you think they connect or diverge from our previous conversations about related figures. And so for me, like when I was reading Benitez Rojo's piece, there was a section. Where is it? Okay. This is on page 20. Because a lot of this has to do with culture and thinking about, for me, I always think about like who gets to define it, who is a part of this conversation and who isn't. But then also thinking about what it means. And like Lisan talks a lot about opacities or things being opaque. And in Benitez Rojo's work, the section, to begin with, there's no pure cultural form, not even the religious one. Culture is a discourse, a language, and as such, it has no beginning or end. It is always in transformation, since it is always looking for the way to signify what it cannot manage to signify. For me, it is thinking about like how Lisan's work and Benitez Rojo work, where he talks about culture. And in Lisan's work, he talks about plantation. The plantation and thinking about it as a system, about a culture. And I think plantation worlds, so that's what he talked about, plantation worlds, and how it is the same yet different when you think about the U.S. South, Black Latin America, the Caribbean, and how like it goes beyond the Caribbean, and thinking about these cultures that were created and how like in the South, so like particularly like NOLA, New Orleans, in Louisiana, and like in certain places like in Florida, you can very tell the in other southern places in the United States, you can very tell that there is this plantation world that currently exists. And so that was something that I found really interesting to me. And I will pass it along to Abby if there were any like key readings and like past figures that we discussed that you saw some connections with.
Thank you for sharing that, Tawana. You bringing up a plantation world really made me think of how Benitez Rojo also describes colonialism and plantation, and he even names the colonizers themselves a machine. It really made me think of how he labels this as a machine, and specifically it makes me think of the passage on page 7 where he says it was a machine made up of a naval machine, a military machine, a bureaucratic machine, a commercial machine, an extractive machine, a political machine, a legal machine, a religious machine, that is an entirely huge assemblage of machines which there is no point in continuing to name. And so what you said really made me think of this passage, especially when it comes to how violent and extractive Europe has been and continues to be towards the Caribbean. And something specifically that called out to me in this passage is that he even calls the colonizer, for example, Menendez de Aviles, a machine also. And so I think it's interesting that here, while you usually see those who are colonized, and especially Black Caribbeans, being called in dehumanizing manners, here he is calling the colonizers machines because of how they have treated all of the indigenous people and everyone in the Caribbean. And that's something that I found really interesting, particularly in Benitez's work. And Charlie, I'm happy to hear any of your thoughts, anything that stood out to you, anything that you didn't like in the passage, or any additional thoughts you have on what we have said, or new thoughts you have.
Thanks, Abby. on Ladybird and the Machine, I bet that also is an anchor to this piece and really important to helping us understand it and understand the critique. And I think it's, I found it helpful to think about the machine idea and the repetition of machine alongside the repeating island, and the repetition of the translations of, there was like arbre and tree, and maybe a Creole term for tree. But the machine versus the Caribbean rhythm from Bomba to other musical traditions, and that like that sort of repetition, a percussive repetition that connects to a kind of a dynamic sort of Caribbean rhythm as such, and the repeating island idea of language, and language in its various iterations and repetition, and how those kinds of repetitions that are each time a little different, or like aren't exact replication, how strongly and poetically that like contrasts with the machine as the figure for the kind of colonizing, rooted, binary, capitalist, colonialist sort of machine. I mean, there's a reason we use that. That begins with the plantation. Like, there's a reason we use that term so much. And I think it's really interesting to think of, well, what's the opposite of that? And I think we're getting like, each of these pieces essentially just can be described as like a very long description of what that, how to define that without grasping it, if that makes sense.
It does. It does make sense. And you all brought up some really good points that's making me like about the machines and the repetition, about like how even though there is a replica, but it's not quite the same. And you know, for me, thinking about the repetition and how it, you know, that there's a pattern that repeats itself across the plantation world, that was something, you know, that was brought up in discussion in class, and an interesting point, just to go on a little bit of a tangent. So apparently for some, it's not necessarily a critique that some people have, but just a notice that like Lissant doesn't write in Creole, but also acknowledging that this is a translated text, a translated text as well. And so a question that I kind of had, I think it's me, is how is the Caribbean able to be called the Caribbean? You know, when we think about that, and then thinking about the, not just the naming, but also the narrative. And so I feel like these two texts is about providing this counter narrative, but also this meta narrative as well. And so for me, it has me rethinking about what goes into language, and like the designation of something being like an official language versus an unofficial language versus, you know, Creole. But then also thinking about the fact that things doesn't need to be transparent all the time. And there was something that in Dr. Sutherland's talk that I referenced earlier, that she talked about open access versus appropriate access to things. And thinking about, you know, a lot of people think that everything should be open and everyone should have access to everything. And there are the belief that things should only have appropriate access to it. So if you're depending on your gender or relation or identity in a community, that you will have access to certain knowledge. And I think that connects to the opacity of, like, not everything has to be transparent or should be transparent. And something we talked that was brought up is that how in certain places, if you leave, for instance, like I've been gone from the Virgin Islands for about 10 years, and how culture and the language shift and change, because it's dynamic, it's not static. And so those were some of the things that I really kind of resonated and connected with me. And so to continue this conversation, like, what was your overall assessment of the material from the week? Did you enjoy it? Was it challenging? I know it was for me. Why not? Was it successful as a series of arguments, claims, observations? Why not? It definitely has me thinking about Caribbeanness differently, about narrative, about who gets to write that narrative and what does that narrative portray and mean, and the fact that these are two really central figures, especially within their time, I think is important and is particularly important. And as somebody who thinks about how language is connected to power, where there's meaning that is put into language, and deciding, you know, and the creolization that some people think is negative, it really does have me reshifting or reframing how I think about the Caribbean. And so, Charlie and Abby, what are you guys' thoughts? And anyone can go first.
What do you think, Abby?
Thank you to London for raising all those questions. I'm really sitting with them. I did, before I actually talk about my main takeaway, I did want to go back to what you brought up about open and appropriate access, because Benita Sorojos, I think he mentioned something that's similar to what you were saying. In the passage on page 12, he says, in order to reread the Caribbean, we have to visit the sources from which the wildly various elements that contributed to the formation of its culture flowed. And this makes me think of, Tawana, like you brought this up in class a few times, but how, for example, how can you really truly do decolonial work, especially as, like, as you mentioned, some people do bring up that Glissant didn't write in Creole, but he does still say that he, you know, he's talking against colonialism, and he is, he's transparent in that. That was a similarity I think I saw between both of their work, in terms of how can you really define the Caribbean, or how can you look at the Caribbean? To me, that's a really complicated question. I think that's a question that we're discovering in all of the readings as we go on and continue throughout the semester. For me, based on some of my takeaways from both of these readings, is that in some ways the Caribbean is in this liminal space where there is so much uprootedness that it's, to me, it's, sometimes it's hard to describe the Caribbean when there has been so much culture lost, in terms of, for example, being forcibly separated from Africa, and what Glissant talks about in the rhizome, that there are multiple roots and some roots die off. And we've had previous conversations about when we're defining the Caribbean, it's important to look at what the Caribbean is as opposed to what the Caribbean is not, in terms of, oh, well, thinking more about having a focus on the people from the Caribbean. And I think I still don't really know the answer of what defines the Caribbean or what is the Caribbean, but these two texts really have opened the way, I think, and especially when it comes to the concepts of repetition, of roots, of music, of movement. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts, Charlie.
Thanks, Abby. I think there's a couple things I want to pick up from what you mentioned. The first being just the question, I think the fact that we're left with a sort of vague definition or understanding of what the Caribbean can mean and what it is kind of exactly the sort of opacity that we're talking about. And that Glisson kind of claims and asserts. So I think there's this, like, by failing to describe it or by thinking about what it is without arriving at anything, really, that we can sort of grab or display, that's exactly kind of the intellectual project that's underway here. So I think that's showing us a lot about these readings, I think. And I think to consider Glisson's language and his use of language and the fact that he's speaking a kind of colonial French, I guess, or a sort of France, or like a French French in like the nationalistic sense. I wouldn't know really, but assuming that, seeing that critique, I think there is a way to say that the way he develops a unique vocabulary that is unique to his own theory, and the way you can kind of tell that he's using words in a way that he only means them to be used, and he's defining them through his repetition of them, what he means by them. I think there's a sort of idiosyncrasy in that language, certainly, that in some way speaks to me, at least, a kind of rebuke or a sort of kind of independence from that language, or certainly not a subservience. That's definitely there for me. But the other thing about the way Glisson writes and reading the Poetics of Relation with regard to the idea of opacity and language is that he's not writing this in a way that caters to certainly not a Western reader, but not really any reader, in that he's presenting his ideas the way he feels like it and the way that fits with his rhythm. And he wants to get these ideas across, but I think this kind of text is meant to, it's very political, but it's not meant to kind of be quickly consumed and digested. And the ideas aren't simple, and they're not meant to be quickly metabolized and recirculated. So I think there's a sense that, I think that relates to the idea of opacity, that the book itself is opaque. But not in a way but its substance is what makes it opaque. If that makes sense. And I think that does tie into what I would offer as we near kind of closing thoughts, is that I really look forward to reading this again and again. I think this is just one of their works that, particularly with Poetics of Relation, that really rewards that, because it is so complex and because it touches on so many different ideas of culture and society and aesthetics and time and the environment and root and relation, mobility. There's just a lot more to return to. And I guess I would close out too by by relating that, like, Poetics of Relation is a text that begs rereading. It necessitates rereading. And so much of what Benitez Rojo was writing about was the act of rereading. So I really like how those fit together.
Thank you for that, Charlie and Abby. I think for me, like, what my closing comments are, some things from the discussion during class, and is creolization as movement and relation as multilingual, you know? And to your point, like, yes, I definitely need to reread this book, because you all brought up passages that I just kind of glossed over. And even like hearing you all read things aloud just had things hitting differently for me. But really thinking about, you know, relation as multilingual, but also it's not something that, you know, everybody's going to understand, you know? And so, Abby, any final thoughts or comments?
Thank you. I would say for my final thoughts, Tawana, I think what you just mentioned, that some of these are hard to understand. I think something that I appreciate about Benitez Anglizan is that they are both from the Caribbean and have various perspectives and talk about their own life experiences. And I think that's something that has been really enlightening throughout this class, is that we are hearing and learning not only about the Caribbean, but from Caribbeanists who identify as Caribbean themselves. And I really enjoyed reading this. And I agree, you both highlighted some really important notes that I either missed or I didn't fully grasp. So I will be rereading both of these as well. And Charlie, I don't know if you have any last statements.
I don't think so. But I really appreciate the time to talk with you all. This was really nourishing and enjoyable.
Same. Thank you all for this very, very rich, very, very thick and insightful discussion that we have. I hope those who are listening will pick up copies and dive in. And still leave a little opaque, which is totally fine. So thank you all for listening.